This is episode 139 of the A-News podcast, which covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on anarchist news. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, see you at your favorite non-sectarian anarchist site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial. Starting with a quote from Braiding Sweetgrass. Can you tell what the collective has been reading lately? Quote, while science could be a source of and repository for knowledge, the scientific worldview is all too often an enemy of ecological compassion. It is important in thinking about this lens to separate two ideas that are too often synonymous in the mind of the public: the practice of science and the scientific worldview that feeds it. Science is the process of revealing the world through rational inquiry. The practice of doing real science brings the questioner into an unparalleled intimacy with nature fraught with wonder and creativity as we try to comprehend the mysteries of the more than human world. Trying to understand the life of another being or another system so unlike our own is often humbling and, for many scientists, is a deeply spiritual pursuit. Unquote. Robin Wall Kimmerer's project is clear, connecting people to what might be called nature or the natural world again, by creating a bridge between net traditional indigenous knowledge and Western science. Here I'm going to understand science as what, on the surface, seems like a common sense understanding of cause and effect. And there, Kimmerer's project makes total sense for I imagine the majority of people in the US, just to speak to my regional experience. Even someone with a profound critique of science probably has a lot of scientific explanations banging around in the back of their head daily. Oh, I'm sick. Someone must have coughed and given me a bug. Oh, that plant is growing because of photosynthesis. Blah, blah, blah. And so to create this relationship between what seems like common sense and indigenous knowledge, Kimmerer makes science just one story among many others. But perhaps we as anarchists, radicals, etc. want to go further. I want to avoid making this argument based on the straw man of science as ruthlessly trying to grasp and understand the entire world and its almighty objectivity. I'm sure that there are many people who believe this to be true, but I'm sure there are also a large number of scientists who would say that ultimately rigorous observation and scientific experimentation can move us towards an understanding of many things, but will ultimately still leave us with mysteries. What I do want to talk about is how science, as one story among many, lets the reasons why we might want an alternative remain hidden. As a friend recently described to me, these are likely not their exact words, so forgive me, science is built on people's literal dreams as much as rigorous experimentation. Yet in formal education, nothing like this story was ever conveyed to me, and serves as an example of why science perhaps isn't exactly a story we want to tell. That so much of what could be thought of as science's story, of what could connect us not only to the people who've made it and the subjects, rather than objects, observed, is hidden from us seems suspect. And even what story could perhaps be found by digging deeper into something like the Latin of a plant's scientific name still seems to leave the plant dead, without agency, its story hidden, without being mysterious. So what could be an alternative? There are obviously numerous quote-unquote alternative forms of medicine, healing, understanding, etc., and perhaps we could incorporate these into our anarchist, scare quotes, science. But I want something more, something as impossible as anarchy itself, an entirely new language. And so we could start with something small. We could sit in rooms with friends and watch a plant. We could describe the way it moves, the way it feels, why it might do what it does. We might say it eats the sunlight, we might say it loves water, and slowly, piece by piece, maybe we can make a language of a room, or even half a room, or even the top of a table, or one corner of a garden.
What's new this week? A text from Amma in La Valette Prison, from and translated by Act for Freedom Now. This is information about Amma, an anarchist prisoner who is trying very hard to reach out in the face of slightly more than usual fuckery from the prison he's in, at least as regards to letting him communicate with the outside. Quote, communication with Amma is difficult, and the information we managed to get is incomplete. Many of his letters have been held, and so far the many telegrams we sent have never reached him. Outgoing letters have arrived in no particular order over 2 weeks after being posted. Visits with his mother were granted 3 weeks after the arrest, and we are still waiting for the response to a comrade's request for visits. A request for house arrest has been rejected, and we are waiting for the reasons to be made known. The news we got only served to increase our rage. On the 8th of October, there was a hearing at the Court of Review. While Ama was being taken to the court and during it, there were heated exchanges and confrontations with the state's servants, the investigating judge, and the public prosecutor in particular. After he was taken back to La Valette, the loathsome guards laid into him. The result? A perforated eardrum due to the screw's blows, beatings, provocation, and threats. Unquote. Best of luck to him and to all anarchist prisoners. There is donation info available, and if you write Italian, he can be added to your list of prisoners to correspond with. We all have these lists, right?
The Fires of Fulvia Ferrari from Transmetropolitan Review, the last installment in the Fulvia Ferrari series of videos and text, this one exploring the relationship between Fulvia and a member of Mario Savio's family. Quote, "My family was very close with the Savio family, as in Mario Savio, leader of Berkeley's free speech movement in the mid-1960s. One day, a woman appeared at the Savio house wearing sunglasses and a black shawl. On her way to the front door, this woman appeared elderly and unable to walk without Mario's assistance, although this was meant to fool anyone surveilling the house. Once she was inside, the woman suddenly transformed into a lively firecracker with a thick, deep laugh," unquote. Having watched/read the final two installments in the series, I definitely like the concept of exploring a city or location's radical history through the various branching paths of Fulvia's relationships, at least in the text. As far as the video goes, I don't really find it adds much, particularly with seemingly random segments like the extended one in which Chaka Khan is connected to Berlin squatters because reasons?
On those arrested during the October Revolt, from anarchists worldwide, a brief update about murders by cops against people in the streets and their attempts to hide what they're doing. Quote, "Dozens of insurgents have been murdered and dozens have lost their eyes as a result of the systematic shootings by the repressive forces during street demonstrations. The bodies of those who have died as a result of uniformed brutality are left in supermarkets and burned to eliminate any evidence. The infrastructure of repression has enabled temporary and sporadic detention and torture precincts. Until now, the main one has been the Bonchidano metro station, while in other regions, there are already rumors of new locations," unquote. Commenter Rosinante also provides a lot of links, mostly in Spanish. Thanks, Rosinante.
Warzone Distro Newsines List November 2019. From Warzone Distro, duh. This list includes 1, a pamphlet from prisoner Anna Benamino on gender and anarchism. 2, Civilitopia, which appears to focus on pro-meat-eating bias in anthropology. 3, some Nietzschean hilarity from a pamphlet extolling the omnipotence of revolutionary cells. 4, a manifesto of confusing metaphors and rabble-rousing by Flowerbomb, who wants to paint on a black canvas? Anyway, 5, an anti-social pro-hedonism rant also by Flowerbomb. 6, Pure Black by Paul Simons. 7, a pamphlet claiming illegalism and individualist anarchists, despite plenty of social anarchists who stole for the Rev, for example, to fund the Spanish Civil War and also in Argentina. And 9, Why Break Windows by recently killed Arminio on defending property destruction.
That's some heavy editorializing right there. The St. Petersburg Anarchists Cooking Up a Vegan Revolution from the BBC. Yes, that BBC. In the eternal fight between anarchy as a friendly, warm and fuzzy tendency versus anarchy as a violent, chaotic, confrontational fuck you and your grandparents tendency, this is, of course, firmly on the cuddly side. Perhaps because it's the BBC talking about anarchists in Russia? Anyway, this is mostly about veganism, specifically veganism in Russia, horizontal organization, and running a small business. The small bit about anarchist political prisoners are safely impugning the Russian state. This quote from one of the participants was interesting, though. Quote, "We have a problem," he says. "Unfortunately, there has been no change in Russia for I don't know how long. A big part of the problem is our mass media and the message the government transmits through it. They say the world is against us. They are homophobic and say that Europe is gay, for example." He says many young people now ignore TV and get their news online. Pollsters have noticed this trend, too. One recent poll found that almost half of Russians aged 18 to 24 get their news from the largely uncensored internet. After a moment of pause, Kostya adds, "I don't think Russians are bad people. They're just not educated and are taught that the rest of the world is against us. From this fear grows a hatred of all difference," unquote. Sounds like plenty of people in the U.S., no? This article is long but worth reading, and it made me go look up recipes for nettle soup, so that's cool.
Nihilism is not nothing, from Medium.com, and before that, from Facebook, apparently. by someone under the name No Wing Anarchy. This is a pretty short explanation of nihilism as a kind of intense activism, defending it against the depredations of big names Zerzan and Gillis, and ending with, of course, Novatore as an exemplar. I guess I find this defense at least a bit friendlier than the strawmanning confusion of Zerzan and the crying fascist wolf of Gillis, but much like the false binary of a friendly, cuddly anarchist versus a terrifying, chaotic one, it still settles on one of the definitions of nihilism that fits easily into the world as it is. The author does pick some appropriate targets, though. Quote, "So why is there this concerted effort against the concept of nihilism from so many different corners of anarchism? Why are some people so bent on opposing what is definitionally and historically something that has been very much ingrained in anarchism? I would argue that it is exactly because of the way that these figures have positioned themselves among anarchism. The unwillingness of nihilism to accept dogma stands opposed to the very dogmatic stances that anarchists like Gillis and Zerzan have taken. Having painted themselves into corners as transhumanist or primitivist, people like this likely feel threatened by a nihilism that would reject transhumanism or primitivism as static ideologies," unquote. I hope to hear more from them in the future. Also, remember kids, compliment with an E.
What's new with LBC, fall 2019, from Guess Who? Wow, whoever chose the image for this thread knows how to make a multi-layered comment. Anyway, here's the roughly quarterly update from the main publisher of anarchist nihilist content. It includes poetry by Wolfie Landstreicher and friends, and a new book called To the Desert Maker by a nihilist-friendly, anti-civ anarchist author out of Turkey. Also, Slingshot organizers for 2020 are out, and there's a reprint of a bio of Dora Marsden, controversial woman, from a controversial publisher.
Anarchism's Possibilities from Institute for Anarchist Studies, Bookshinness All. Here, the editorial group behind the publication Perspectives makes the fucking bizarre decision to ask a non-anarchist for his definition of anarchism because... why? Because he's a famous name they had access to? Seriously, what the fuck? Previous efforts from IAS have included straight yanking other people's words for their words booklets, a similar effort in making anarchist thinking bite-sized for newbies, and even that makes more sense than asking someone like KSR, however much you might have liked his Mars series. I guess Perspectives is having a hard time finding content? Their upcoming edition has the theme of imagination, so maybe reprinting the intro to a book on anarchists but not necessarily by anarchists lets us know what to expect. Obviously, non-anarchists can be plenty interesting and illuminating, but to have a non-anarchist be the selling point seems to undercut an anarchist position. Maybe that's just me.
Militia destroys the Ali Kushu Center in Ankara and a luxury yacht in Istanbul, from anarchists worldwide. Quote, HBDH, People's United Revolutionary Movement, have issued a written statement claiming responsibility for the destruction of the Ali Kushu Center in Ankara and the luxury yacht Saharazat that was docked on the shore of Bebek in Istanbul. Both actions took place on November 3rd and resulted in spectacular fires that could be seen for miles. Some excerpts from the HBDH statement: whoever speaks of humanity, comradeship, and children today should turn to Rojava first. Let them face the screams of the children bombed with chemical phosphorus bombs. The occupation of Rojava is the mirror image of colonialism and fascism. It is Erdogan in the mirror. Unquote.
In Praise of Insurrection from Autonomies, which is an anarchist project with the kind of gravitas that many U.S. anarchists crave. Here they offer a short piece by Diego Cano, who comes down firmly on the side of participation in revolt, regardless of the label or ideology of the event, a position that is respectful of the reality that people's motivations are always mixed, and anarchist participation is more likely to sway an action or a group of people than non-participation. Of course, this works best when there is a, or many, strong groups of anarchists who are holding an anarchist line, as otherwise, as has also been demonstrated, active anarchists can and do get sucked into reformism. Anyway, quote, "Every popular mobilization constitutes a mode of public conversation. It is neither television talk nor parliamentary language. No, we say public conversation. A diversity of languages and traditions necessary for the constitution of a heterogeneous popular force. What is at stake here is a mode of democracy that, although it cannot be separated from forms of representation, is irreducible to them. A democratic excess before the status quo of neoliberalism. Social citizenship versus financial capitalism, plebeian power against corporations and the mainstream media, popular republicanism against an oligarchic conception of the republic. There is something that is not domesticable in the experience of democracy. Let us call it our wild democracy, unquote.
Ecuadorian armed forces hunt anarchist cells by ANA from A Infos. Super short alert. Quote, the Ecuadorian armed forces have a new mission following the 11-day protests in Ecuador. Identify, isolate, and neutralize insurgents groups. In a public act on Wednesday, Commander Altamirano referred to the new directive issued by the Ministry of Defense for the armed forces to identify the insurgents and anarchist cells so-called detected during the last protests. For his part, the Director of Joint Command Operations referred to the statements of the President of the Confederation of Indigenous Nationalities of Ecuador about the creation of an army for indigenous communities, unquote. More armies, yay.
Prison profiteers attacked by militant cells of fire against prisons from anarchists worldwide. Three actions against construction heavy machinery, one in Rodoswich, and two more in Bautzen. Quote, there is one reason why the majority of prisons are located in bleak and remote areas. These giant gray buildings are not to be noticed by the public, who should not recall that behind these walls there are humans rotting, not recall that they might be responsible for their suffering. Through this, society refuses the discussion, if we can talk about justice here, with this judiciary and its executors ruling. Over the past years, we have observed that the prison issue lacks visibility even in radical left contexts. This action is a contribution to emphasize the importance of a struggle against prisons and the prison society, unquote. Yeah! Also, write an anarchist prisoner today.
Germany, hashtag fight for Rojava, Mercedes dealership attacked, from anarchists worldwide. Germany is representing this week. A couple comments criticized the meta aspect of this attack. Quote, some Germans smash a Mercedes dealership because Mercedes, not the dealership, supplies Turkey with military vehicles, not the cars that were smashed, which are used in Syria, not Turkey or Germany, against the Kurds in Rojava, unquote. Which just says to me that some ANews readers are beginning to understand the meaning of global economies. Good for them. No one's claiming it's going to solve all or any of the problems, people. With that said, nothing wrong with some successful smashy-smash. Moving on.
Athens, Greece, attacks on riot cops from anarchists worldwide. Slightly tactical report back on this action with video for people who like that sort of thing. Quote, our answer to the eviction of Vancouver squat should be very clear to the regime. One, the answer to the state violence is violence back. Two, the reoccupation of squats, which were evicted by the regime, is one of our main goals. Three, attacks will continue until cops leave our neighborhoods. Also, we give our solidarity to strugglers of Rojava and Chile who are under attack by Turkish and Chilean regimes, unquote.
When America tried to deport its radicals, from the New Yorker magazine. Just what I would expect of a New Yorker piece on anarchists. A, safely historical. B, with details that make it come alive, including a satisfying exchange between bad guy Hoover and icon Goldman. C, drawing connections between history and today, specifically the treatment of and motivation for deporting immigrants and, quote, deportation mania, unquote, as Emma herself called it. Quote, the Justice Department began a nationwide crackdown in September 1917, raiding all four dozen IWW offices and the homes of many activists. In sealed boxcars, wobblies from around the country were brought to Chicago's Cook County Jail. When they received news of the Bolshevik takeover in St. Petersburg, they celebrated by singing and banging tin cups on their cell bars. 101 leading wobblies were charged with violating a long list of federal laws as part of a mass trial, still the largest in American history, that ran through the spring and summer of 1918. The jury took a mere 55 minutes to render its verdict, finding all the defendants guilty on all counts. They were sentenced to an average of 8 years in prison. Tons of IWW records, which the Justice Department had seized in the raids, were later burned. Fear of Bolshevism blended with a longstanding hostility towards certain classes of immigrants. By 1890, those coming ashore at Ellis Island were no longer from places like Britain and Germany. The great bulk were now from Italy, Eastern Europe, or the Russian Empire, and they were Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, or Jewish. There were a lot of them, too. By 1900, the majority of men in Manhattan over the age of 21 were foreign-born. Unquote. The more things change, no?
Audio and video. We are prepared, motherfuckers. Well, motherfuckers is censored. Greek anarchists on new democracy regime. An hour and 45 minutes from the final straw. Quote, this week we're sharing a conversation that I had with comrades from Radio Zones of Subversive Expression, an anti-authoritarian pirate radio station based in Athens, Greece. Unquote. Ignoring the first portion of the title, this interview is really just an extended rundown of the mainstream political situation in Greece, Syriza's swindling of radical support, and the hand-in-glove relationship between business and government, all of which is definitely interesting because context, but ultimately a little lacking in the anarchy department. There is, however, a very nice segment from Sean Swain at the beginning, so listen.
Anarchy Bang, introducing episode 44, Intentional Communities, 2 hours hosted by Ian. Quote, the idea of getting a bunch of like-minded people together, moving onto some land, and living out one's anarchist dreams in the real world has been an attractive one for many people ever since the very beginning of anarchism in the U.S., with Josiah Warren and his crew. Across recent decades, shared anarchist living spaces have served as refuges, experiments, and/or the fulcrums of change in their various forms as squats, punk houses, tree sits, free states, student co-ops, and, of course, hippie communes. While there have been many failures in this endeavor, there has also been a number of successes that continue on to this day, most notably the Catholic worker communities and the Federation of Egalitarian Communities. Join us this Sunday as we discuss intentional communities and how they relate with anarchy and anarchists. Join in the conversation, unquote. Calm down on those exclamation marks there, Sonny.
The Ex-Worker number 71, Radio of ASEAN, Dispatches from Chile Part 2. 2 hours and 45 minutes from CrimeThink. Quote, 2 weeks of revolt in Chile and there are no signs of it slowing down. In this Radio of ASEAN dispatch, we bring you up to speed on all the developments in the past week. The president's attempts to quell the protests with reforms, the lifting of martial law, and the cancellation of the upcoming APEC trade summit. We have 2 communiques translated into English from Chile and 8 interviews, unquote. Those 8 interviews are the bulk of this episode, and interviewees range from anarchists, a, quote, anti-authoritarian legal worker, unquote, middle school students, and teachers at the Colegio Paulo Freire. Usually I would want to criticize this kind of thing for not specifically focusing on anarchists, but I do want to give them credit for not synthesizing some false, unified anarchist street movement. That being said, more anarchy all the time forever. Also, the second half is in Spanish.
Topic of the week, OPSEC. Are anarchists any good at OPSEC? Is there something particularly anarchist about OPSEC or something particularly important about OPSEC for anarchists? On the one hand, I've seen anarchists exercise paranoia about communicating with each other, even when discussing things that are entirely legal. On the other hand, the state asymmetrically monitors and pursues anarchist activity as criminal, even when it's not. And so any efforts at practicing good OPSEC seems better than being careless about it. What are the most important guidelines, practices, pitfalls to avoid that you can offer about how to have good OPSEC? What are some ways in which you see anarchists being overly paranoid about OPSEC? How do you think OPSEC practices differ regarding in-person activity and online activity? Is practicing good OPSEC online impossible, or is it more difficult than practicing good OPSEC in person? Damo.
OPSEC.
OPSEC.
I am wondering when the weird military conjunction of OPSEC has become more popular than security culture, or has that always been the case?
Well, I actually, that's a nice thought. I mean, like from a frame of reference, like what you're thinking, why you're talking about it. I mean, I think both things really, for me, have to do with a particular kind of approach that people take and what they are interested in. Because this topic, like a lot of gear-based topic, seems to attract a certain kind of person.
Yeah, I mean, it is, if it's not a conversation about something that is along the lines of who do you actually have in your life or how do you treat those people in your life, it is instead a conversation about what kind of encryption are you using, what kind of apps are you using. And I think the answer in terms of the more gear-oriented side is that it will always fail you. So I guess you kind of start from there.
Yeah, I would love to be able to cite a different source. But there is a fantastic article that just went up from North Shore Counter Info, which are people based in Ontario. called Confidence, Courage, Connection, Trust, a proposal for a robust security culture. But the no blogs or whatever server it is that they're using is really either hammered or whatever. It's all WordPress hell. That article is very good. It's not been republished at the IGD website, and I strongly recommend people checking it out because it is almost exactly what it is that this person is asking for. But it also, I think, turns us to what I think are the underlying questions in this topic of the week, which is, what is a robust security culture? Mm. And frankly, do we want it?
Right. I mean, if you're the stereotype of the robust security culture is basically just one of being super paranoid, I would imagine, for most people.
Well, there's an aspect of that. I mean, partially this is this question of like, is the thing that we are trying to secure, this culture that is so wonderful, basically 90% of the statements that come out around it, the thinking that comes out around it, is that it's activist culture. Mm-hmm. It's not anarchist culture. It's activist culture. Like if there were people who were being hauled in by the state for thought crimes along the lines of, like, the culture that we're part of, it's mostly about, like, we don't want a disruption of our event that's happening next weekend or whatever, like... And the kind of people who are like, oh, I so want to disrupt this event next weekend. Like, like that's the sort of like a spy versus spy that you're choosing to play.
Yeah. And I guess someone did a nice kind of breakdown of OPSEC, the actual like words, operational and security. And I guess it is more interesting to glom on in security culture, the actual culture part. Like, if we're not...
Right.
If anarchy doesn't just mean attack, 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 or if anarchy actually means relations between people, then it's like, it's not just being, like, you know, having the modern equivalent of the shoe soles that turn backwards or whatever.
Was that not good? Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, I guess where the obvious, it seems like the topic of the week wants to go in a very technical direction, and yes. What is the opposite direction of that? And I guess it's, how do you bring people into your life? And maybe it's in a way that doesn't involve technology. But then again, who does that anymore?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the OPSEC versus security culture is a type of nuance that I tend to not care that much about because both seem like, do we get nerdy and or military while we do activism? Or do we want activism as a form of life and we want all of the people who we touch and meet to be part of it? Like, neither, like...
Right. Yeah, security culture seems like setting up your life as some sort of, like, nonprofit where you have certain information that you don't want people to know versus doing, like, I don't know, anarchist spy or something. Yeah, like you said.
Mission Impossible.
Yes, exactly.
And so it's interesting when you even sort of reflect on this, like a lot of people who are more or less paranoid or whatever, like talk about this topic as if it's a really important thing that we should be doing actively and frankly that we can't do anything else until we do that. And so that sort of brings us into the like the war communism conversation, like we can't deal with the feminism issue until we get our OPSEC.
Once we get rid of all these kulaks or whatever, then we can deal with it.
And I think that the self-criticism that I will take on this is that, you know, for me, anarchism was mostly motivated by my desire to live a life with people that I liked, with anarchist people. And OPSEC has become for me very much a side topic.
Right.
It's so irrelevant because I'm in fact doing anarchism in such a way that I don't engage with the state, like as a point of preference and
in fact, it has been usually other anarchists that are the people that are targeting you more than the state.
No, I mean, in terms of my daily life, my OPSEC largely has to do with the other anarchists. That's totally fair to say.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we're talking about anarchist culture, it seems like something like security seems more having a certain bar or certain levels of interaction with people rather than something that is, or I think I've heard you talk about it in terms of someone is going to be around for 3 years or more than they are a part of your life or something like that.
So then your OPSEC is all about the fact that those people are going to fuck you.
Right, exactly.
Like, there's no other way to say it. Mm. Like, that basically if you're a short-termer anarchist, then the only OPSEC is to stay away.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure there is some sort of balance between get off my lawn and encrypt my life, but I don't think I work in that area. But
right, and that's the part, of course, that, you know, it's worth saying as someone who is hostile to a lot of anarchist logic, or sorry, a lot of activist logic, that it is worth reflecting and sitting on the fact that that people who want to encrypt their hard drive and encrypt their life, that these people, their orientation is a really different orientation. You know, it's war anarchism. Mm. And I don't see any situation in war anarchism where OPSEC is a central part of your anarchist identity in life where you're not going to lose.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we are in fact fighting an asymmetrical warfare with an intractable, you know, enemy force that will win.
Yeah, and I mean, the way that I am not around a lot of OPSEC conversations, but it seems that the gray area is something like social media anyway. So, I mean, you have created your own weak spot, and so all the encryption in the world can't stop you from falling prey to that, I guess.
I feel like that's a little bit more controversial of a statement than, like... I think that a lot of our friends who are doing social media and all the rest, they're fine as long as they're using it in a really limited way. Mm. Like, you can hypothetically, you know, be consistent in your VPN and maybe even be brave enough or ridiculous enough that you have multiple VPNs so that you sort of stay...
one or two hops behind.
Right, because, you know, ultimately with a VPN, you're trusting the fact that you're paying some company to hold your identity
right
for you while you surf the web. Like, VPNs, they're great, they're fantastic. Like, I absolutely use them when I'm torrenting.
Oh, yeah.
Because I basically trust that the service that I'm doing is going to hold the ground unless the
hammer really comes down.
The particular media company really wants to burst through that. But, you know, the way the media companies are even playing these games are, like, they're not really playing to win. Mm. They're playing to, like, keep the bar at a certain level. Mm. Anyways, with that said, I think it is appropriate for, you know, for people to be consistent about VPNs and blah, 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 blah. But... And I also think that people can have a pretty sanitary attitude towards how they do social media. Mm. But if you're responding to comments, if you're fighting people on the internet, there's no hope for you.
Yeah.
Like OPSEC is ruined.
When you make your own identity map or whatever that would be called.
Yeah. You know, especially because most of the stuff is... it's too difficult to do as an individual to maintain consistency from the air gapness of your laptop, you know, to all the different things that you'd have to pay attention to. And most people don't do any of this thinking or any of this problem solving in a social context. Mm. Because that's the other aspect of OPSEC, is like staying personally sanitary from certain things. There's some... it's doable, but as soon as it sort of becomes social media as a form of life, you know, in other words, as soon as like you're talking about consistent behavior that you do in a lazy way, and then also as soon as you include your media devices like cell phones, I just don't think it's humanly possible to maintain the vigorous, you know, hard lines that you would have to maintain in terms of your daily life to even consider OPSEC to be a possible thing that you're doing. Mm. But it definitely is the kind of topic, again, bringing it back around to the gear conversation, the kind of people who love to talk about gear love to talk about how they have achieved.
Right. They are in the bubble suit or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't have any sort of OPSEC or security culture plan in my life beyond a VPN and certain containers and things like that.
Oh, but you do containers in the browser?
Yeah, or? Yeah. But I am also of a generation where almost a decade of my age or growing life is documented in one form or another on Facebook. So that is something that is I'm increasingly becoming aware of. Not that I think it particularly matters, but it is something that I definitely did not think about when I was like 16.
Yeah, I would say that, of course, the right option is to stop using social media, full stop.
Which is always the answer to cleanse yourself, is to just stop.
Yeah, just stop. The problem with that is that you become lonelier.
Mm.
I mean, you know, there's no doubt to me that my friendship superiority mapping is absolutely like in real life friends first.
Right.
And internet friends way lower down. But I interact with those way lower down people an awful lot more than I interact with the in real life friends. And that speaks a lot to, you know, all the sort of the nature of our social interaction in the 21st century. But that's also just true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think a lot of times anarchists spend a lot of energy thinking that the purity of our beliefs can at some point overcome the true reality of the terrible things around us or whatever in the fuck. And that part, of course, like, get over that. but there is a deep contradiction in that conversation and in the activist culture that is being tried to, you know, try to be flourished and whatever in the fuck. I mean, I think activist culture is bleak.
Mm.
It is really bleak because on the one hand, it's basically let's fucking Instagram each other's fucking hoo-has. And on the other hand, let's OPSEC. Like,
if only we could synthesize the two.
Yes, if only. I mean, again, I think a lot of the stuff is really cute. Like, there's sort of a new wave of the anti-camera face paint or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, until there's a social movement that can fucking tear the goddamn cameras off the walls, the cameras are going to be on the walls.
Yeah, and you're the person with the face paint or whatever. You sure are making yourself stick out.
Well, thank you very much for this conversation.
Thanks. This week's podcast was sound edited by Lino Mabel. The What's New was written by Jackie and Greg and read by Chiseling Greg. The editorial is also by Greg. And we thank Aragorn and a friend for the help with the topic of the week, OPSEC. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackcart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, see you at anarchistnews.org and are the Anarchist IRC chat room linked on ANews.